Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
Hey guys, King Baby Duck here, and welcome to a special edition of our one-on-one interview series. On this week's show, we've got not one, not two, not three, nor even just four interviews. No, this week, we've got a solid 10 one-on-one segments, all recorded at this past weekend's Penny Arcade Expo at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. I chatted with the developers and PR guys working on and with Secret Ponchos, HyperX, Fract, Cosmic DJ, Jungle Rumble, Aztez, Project Cyber, Race the Sun, Broforce, and Monsters Ate My Birthday Cake. That's a lot to cover in one show, so let's not waste any time whatsoever. It's the Boston Bastard Brigade's PAX East 2014 101 Extravaganza! Coming here at the Devolver Digital booth, trying out the game Cosmic DJ, and I'm joined here with Catherine Wensk. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, that's it, yeah.
And you helped create this game called Cosmic DJ.
Yes, yes.
So, how did Cosmic DJ first come into fruition?
Well, I work at Gleek, and Gleek, we do a lot of sounds and music for video games, and, you know, that's what we're really passionate about. We wanted to share that experience with people, and, like, you know, not a lot of people know how to make music, and so we wanted to give people a chance to try and do that and share that kind of excitement.
So what is the story behind Cosmic DJ? Because I noticed that there are, like, these antennas you have to fix. So what is going on in this world of Cosmic DJ?
Well, you show up in space, I guess, and then you get befriended by a DJ guy. And you're DJing a party, and some other dude comes in and makes really bad music and breaks all the jam antennas. So your goal is to make really awesome music and repair those.
And what I've been noticing is after you're done creating these songs, you can actually share them online with people.
Yes, that's actually something we really wanted to do. Share, like, hey, I made this track, check it out. Like, you know, you might not be experienced in making music, but look what I can make here. And so even if you play the same level and someone else plays that too, it won't sound exactly the same. It's all unique.
Right. So you're creating these levels, you're helping to fix all these antennas. What is going to be the overall goal of Cosmic DJ? Not just within the game, but maybe even for the player themselves.
I think the main goal is to show people how fun it is to make music. Introduce them to sequencers, how to get used to hearing, like, these beats and the creativity that you have when you're making music.
So I noticed that you have it all set up on iPads, and I'll take it probably iPhones as well.
Yes.
Are you going to be doing it for PC, Mac? Are you planning on doing more console release for it?
Yes, we're planning to do PC and Mac. Hopefully we'll get it onto Steam. I think it would be great on PS4, because that's the kind of clientele that really likes his music kind of games. So
I can actually kind of picture people using, like, the PlayStation camera.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, using our hands to actually help create the little beats and everything like that. I think that would really be really cool.
Make it happen, we'll do it.
So, when are you expecting to release Cosmic DJ to the world?
Hopefully in a couple months. So we're really close, very, very close.
Really cool. So what I like about the game, too, is how you can create the tracks, you can share it with your friends. Are you hoping to do maybe something of, like, a competition of sorts? Maybe with, like, people rating the songs and doing, like, the best of the month, the best of the week?
I think that would be great. I'd love to have feedback from different people, and that's one of the best things about coming to PAX. Like, people get to play and be like, hey, it'd be cool if you could do this, or I'd like to see this in the future. And we definitely want to expand and kind of listen to what the audience likes.
And speaking of expansion, I know you have a little few levels here and there that you're showing up. Are there plans to add, like, more songs, add more beats, add more things to create more music?
We can definitely do that. We had played before, kind of making a challenge, like a simple Simon kind of thing. how that feels, but I think first we want to focus on this and then, you know, eventually add more, maybe more sounds and yeah, maybe more music as well.
And one of the other questions I have is, I know that in each level you have your specific sounds. Will there be a sort of like side sort of replay where you can use any sound you want from any level?
We currently don't have that, but we do have a quick play. And so the quick play, you can, it comes with like four sounds, and then you just can clip, you know, new sounds, and then it'll kind of refresh and give you random sounds there. So that's one way we're doing that. I have actually heard that several times today, like, hey, is there a way I can just choose what instruments? And that might be something we want to look into.
Yeah, maybe it will be like one of the future expansions that you can add to the game.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Catherine, thank you so much for joining me here on Boston Bash Brigade. Look out for Cosmic DJ, would you say maybe early summertime?
I hope, maybe so. Soon future, the upcoming few months.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
そのまま踊って帰っちゃうけ。
I'm here at the Team Colorblind booth with Ben, who is showing off the game Aztez. Welcome to the Boston Bash Brigade.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about Team Colorblind.
Team Colorblind is two people. We're from Phoenix. We should be more, but we're control freaks. But yeah, we've been in Phoenix working on the game for a couple years now. We've both been in the business for a long time, and this is our first big singular thing where we've been in control of for a while. Yeah.
So you've worked on other games besides this one. What are some of your past titles?
We've been working on mostly, like, you know, independent experimental stuff. We worked on Off-Road Velociraptor Safari together, actually. Blush, Minotaur China Shop. Just really obscure experimental browser games. And a lot of contract work, you know, so.
But this is your first official title under the Team Colorblind game.
Correct, yeah, absolutely. It's our flagship.
So tell us a little bit about Aztez. What's the story behind the character that you are playing?
So the story behind the character you're playing, well, let me go ahead and back up one step. It's a game about the Aztec Empire about 100 years before the Spanish show up. So you're actually going to be bouncing back and forth between a strategy game of the Empire itself and these combat sequences. The character that you control is actually a promising young warrior that has been trained by the priests to just be incredible. And as soon as one of them dies, they just replace it with the next promising kid. So you're basically just a never-ending string of young Special Forces warriors.
So it's kind of reminiscent of the Wii U game Zombie U, where you just come back as other characters.
Yeah, right, yeah, it's very similar.
Well, I gotta say, too, it has a very similar vibe to another really great game that was on the original Wii, Mad World.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love Platinum games. They're huge inspirations. You know, Bayonetta, Mad World, Okami, same people worked on Okami. Yeah, I love them to death. We actually prototyped the look before Mad World happened, so they technically stole that from us. But yeah, we love everything Platinum, for sure.
So as the levels progress, how will the warrior evolve?
The warrior is going to slowly unlock weapons as you continue to play the game. But you're also going to be able to collect all the gear that falls off enemies and customize your appearance. But for the most part, we want to give you the tools from the start. We don't want to make people unlock mechanics and stuff like that. So it'll be a learning experience.
Okay. So I noticed that the level that we play today, it's a 4-hour time limit, try to kill as many people as possible. Is that going to be the whole game just like that? Or is there going to be a little bit more like side-scroller elements to it as well?
So there's not going to be any side-scrolling, but there's... like, the 4-minute survival thing is just one of many different types of combat events. So you'll have everything from kill this specific opponent to protect this specific person to survive waves to... Yeah, it's going to be all over the place. We just want to mix it up for you.
All right. So there'll be, like, boss battles as well for the viewers?
Absolutely.
Will there be any kind of multiplayer aspect to Aztez?
Not in the initial release. If the game does okay when we release it and we're able to add more content, we would love to do co-op. Yeah, but not initially.
So, where are you hoping to release this? I noticed that you're playing with an Xbox controller. Is this going to be Xbox One, PS4? What's like the general idea of where we're going to be able to play this game?
Yeah, so it'll be on Steam first, for sure, PC, Mac, Linux. And then we're already approved for PS4, Xbox One, and Wii U. So that'll happen a couple months after the initial release. And then we'll do Vita. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. And when are you planning to release it to the public?
We're not totally sure yet. Like I said, the team is just two of us, so it's kind of hard to see too far into the future. But hopefully this year. Yeah.
Excellent. Ben, thank you so much for joining me on Boston Bastard Brigade. And where's the best place for people to check out more info on Aztez?
Aztez.com has everything.
Excellent. Yeah. Ben, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a good one.
You too. Here with David from HyperX. Welcome to the Boston Bass Brigade.
Thanks, man. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you enjoying PAX East this year?
Well, I love it. You know, I'm lucky enough that I've been here like three times. This is like my third, maybe my fourth. But I love the city, first of all. I had chowder last night. Finally, had some seafood last night. But, you know, PAX is such a cool show because we come here, energy of the gamers, energy of the enthusiasts, the people that just love playing games, right? You know, it's just so cool. Everybody's all connected in spirit, and we all love what we do. We all love game playing. You know, we all love, like, getting free swag, you know? It's like seeing all the companies here. It's like, this is so cool, man.
Yes. So, with HyperX, what sort of new gaming experiences are you hoping to bring to the gamers across the country and maybe even the globe?
Oh, man. So HyperX is cool, right? You know, HyperX is a part of Kingston Technology, which is a memory company. So, you know, we make SSDs, we make gamers, so we make memory. So basically, you know, if you're a gamer, you want to put your game on like an SSD, you can get into the game that much quicker. Your game's going to load faster, your levels are going to load faster, you're going to save, you know, the game saves are much quicker, get into the game quicker, you know, and then system memory does the same thing, you know, it loads game, helps load games faster, makes the gameplay experience more, you know, that much better. But what we really love doing is we love supporting our esports teams. You know, at our booth, we're lucky to bring in like Team Evil Geniuses here. You know, they're one of the best teams at StarCraft. You know, they're up and coming, they're great at League of Legends, and obviously Justin Wong is one of the best Spider 4 gamers in the world, you know, so yeah. He's cool. They're lucky to have here. It's like, you know what, they come here, they can play these guys. It's cool. Crepo's here, you know, it's all cool. One of the things we're doing is we're coming out with a headset for gamers, because like we know everybody wants to hear car crashes, gunfire, explosions. You're playing Titanfall, you're doing LOL, Hearthstone, you know,
yeah.
Monster Clans, I don't know, you know.
Right.
You know, all those games. It's like, so we came out with a cool-looking headset called HyperX Cloud, and it's got memory foam on the ear cushions, because it's like, we know that when people are playing, the time just goes, the days just go by, the hours go by, right? It's like, you want something comfortable, so by coming out with a headset, we use memory foam on the ear cans, because we just want people to have a comfortable gaming experience. We don't want people to have like gamer ear. You know, your ears. I wear glasses. Sometimes those glasses push up against my temples. This is so uncomfortable.
And it hurts. It hurts sometimes. Yes.
It does. Right. Yeah. I don't. You know. I mean, I'll be honest. I don't play games for hours on end, you know. I wish I could, but you know, I'm busy with life, I'm busy with work and everything. As I, even after playing like an hour or two, man, it hurts. You know, the side of my head, it's like the glasses push into my temples, makes an indentation, and it's like, it's not very comfortable. You know, it sounds cool, but you know, just now that we have something coming out, I was like happy when I heard that our company was coming out with something using memory foam. It's so cool. It's just very comfortable, and the sound is great.
And I had a chance to give it a try. What I love about it is, you don't, it's not even touching the ear at all. It's actually just surrounding your head. And I don't often get a chance to try out like a headset that gives you that sort of, you know, protection. And I've never, to be honest with you, every other headset, I still feel it pushing down on an ear somewhere. This one, it surrounds it.
Well, you know, thank you for the kind words. We really appreciate it, because that's the kind of feedback we want to hear that helps us. You know, I mean, it encloses the ear, so that way it blocks out some of the ambient noise. I'm really happy that you found that it's more comfortable. It doesn't touch your ear, you know, so it keeps it comfortable. So hopefully, the next time you fire up your game, you're going to be playing on it, you're going to forget that you even have these on. That's what we want, right? That's like the best experience. The microphone, if you're doing online gaming, is detachable, so you can totally use it just to listen to music.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice that, because I did notice that there wasn't a mic set, but there is going to be one that you can actually attach to it.
Yeah, you know, sorry about that. The one that you tried, I forgot to tell you this before we started talking here, is like the one that you tried on, we didn't put the mic on there because because it's not set up for online play here, you know.
Right.
We're not connected to the outside world. We're just like, people here are playing Titanfall, you know. It's like, hey, just let it roll. Just let it play, you know. It's like, we're not talking to anybody. It's kind of that storyline play, so.
But it's going to be detachable. You can use it if you want to. You don't want to use it. So I like that because I would feel, like, really awkward if I'm walking around the street listening to my iPod and I still have the headset.
Yeah, yeah.
It would look kind of funny, but to be able to take it off and just enjoy it just for a regular headset, I like that. That is cool.
It's, you know what? It's cool. Yeah, exactly. You take it on. It's easy as pulling it on and snapping it back in. It's really simple as that. It's just a really, really cool headset, you know, and the price is really good on it, you know. Is it okay? I can tell the price.
Yes, absolutely.
It's like $99.99, and it's available for pre-order on Newegg. So it's like, it's a really cool price. And you know, I tell you what, let's do this. I'm going to get you one. You try it on. You like it, you know. You really like it. You want to give one away to one of your listeners, you and I will hook it up, okay?
All right. That sounds great, man.
Yeah. Maybe, anything you want, okay?
Excellent. Yeah. Yo, David, thank you so much for joining me here on B3. For all your HyperX needs, where's the best place for people to check that out?
Go to kingston.com/HyperX, HyperX.
Dude, thank you so much, man.
Thanks, dude.
Don't lose your way.
Alright, I'm here with Trevor Sticker of Disco Pixel, showing off the video game Jungle Rumble. Welcome to the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Thank you.
So, be honest, which came first, the game concept or the monkeys?
The game concept.
So, where did the idea come from regarding, you know, the touchscreen rhythm game that is Jungle Rumble?
I love rhythm games. I'm a huge rhythm game nerd since the days of Parappa. I imported Rhythm Heaven when it was Rhythm Tengoku and Elite Beat Agents, and it was also Tatakai Wendan. I've made games for 16 years. I've always wanted to make a rhythm game. I was in Puerto Rico a little more than a year ago at a wedding. Dance floor was totally packed, which happens in Puerto Rico. And all of a sudden, the DJ stopped. And it was silent. You could hear the frogs through the windows. I'm wondering what's going on. A band slowly walks onto the dance floor, and they start blowing horns, banging drums, making a ruckus. Everybody erupts. It's crazy. The horns would blow at the mother of the bride, and she would start dancing faster. The drums would walk up to the little nephew of the groom, and he would go crazy. The band started snaking their way through the crowd. Uncle Tito picked up a cowbell and followed him, going, whoop, whoop, whoop. And that was the game I wanted to make.
So, from that, you got the idea of probably the whole concept of grabbing each monkey and having them tag along with another monkey and so forth, correct?
Exactly. It's like a conga line.
Very cool. So, the idea of the game is you're trying to get your bananas back from, what'd you say, the evil monkeys or are they like orangutans of sorts?
So, they're a rival tribe who invades to steal your bananas. Now, what happens, you got to the second world where you actually invade the invaders to figure out what's going on. And eventually you find out that they're not evil. Their jungle is being cut down and they're just trying to survive.
So my question is, because I did see all that, will you be going up against those who were trying to destroy their jungle then later on in the game?
Absolutely. Spoiler alert. You know who's cutting down the jungle?
The humans, of course.
The people.
Will that mean that later on in the game, the monkeys you were once fighting against will be teaming up with you?
Exactly.
Before we even started playing the video game, you had mentioned that you had lived in Japan for a little while. Would you say a little bit of the Japanese culture was greatly influenced by the way this game was made?
That's right. We were talking about that because what you can't see on a podcast is you're wearing a big banner that says Ichiban in Japanese. So, I don't think this is a very Japanese game. I've made games in Japan. We were just actually showing it at Bit Summit, and there's a guy walking by with a monkey on his shoulder.
You should have seen it. No, look right over there. There's actually a gorilla.
Oh, wow. Sorry about that. This makes for a great pod.
It's all right.
So we were at Kyoto showing our game to regular old gamers. I think they probably thought it was a foreign game that was brought over. You know, in the West, we tend to see things that are bright and funky as Japanese, but there's definitely components that are a Japanese aesthetic that a Japanese person would recognize. I don't think this game has too many of those.
I can really, like, imagine this being in sort of like a Japanese arcade with one of those drum rhythm games.
Oh, Taiko no Tatsujin.
Yes, exactly.
Taiko Master.
Imagine putting this game with the Taiko Master.
That's an awesome idea. I hope you don't want to cut.
No, it's fine. Just something to maybe throwing with you in case there's like a concept or an idea where you're able to go out to Japan and bring forth like an arcade style version of Jungle Rumble.
I'd love to do that. We're launching in Japan. We were just exhibiting in Japan, so we're pretty excited about that.
So when will this game be launching in America? Do you have an official release date yet?
Start of May.
Very cool. And you can get it on iOS, Android, all those devices?
It'll be on iOS at first. We're going to follow it up a week or so later with the Android version, but it runs on both.
And are you planning on maybe porting it to something like 3DS, Wii U, PlayStation Vita that actually has a sort of touchscreen mechanics?
Absolutely. We're in talks with Nintendo. We're in talks with Sony. Wii U, Vita, whatever's clever.
Very cool. Thank you so much for joining me here on B3. You can check out Jungle Rumble. Where's the best place for people to get more info on Jungle Rumble?
You can check out discopixel.com. Or you can check out Indie Game Antics at facebook.com/discopixelgames.
Thank you very much. And good luck with the rest of PAX East.
Thanks, man. Have fun at PAX.
I am here at the Flip 5 Blue with Aaron Sanfilippo, the creator of Race the Sun. Thank you, and welcome to the Boston Master Brigade.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So, the concept of Race the Sun came to you when you were playing one of the more recent Star Fox games, correct?
That's sort of true, yes. We were very inspired by the early Star Fox games for Super Nintendo. So, it's kind of a funny story around that. My parents didn't actually get us a Super Nintendo when we were kids, but you used to be able to go to the video store and rent one. And so we would rent Super Nintendos on our birthday, and we'd always get Star Fox and Super Mario Brothers. And so it was like, it was a game that we played every few months for years on end, like on our birthdays. And so it was just kind of like a very memorable gaming experience for us. And so I think that early, that Super Nintendo version is probably the biggest inspiration for us.
Very cool. And now, what makes Race the Sun cool is the fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, but every day the map changes, correct?
That's true, yes. So it's kind of a combination of procedural generation with hand-designed patterns. And so the procedural world generator will generate a unique world for each day. And then everybody in the world who's playing will be playing that exact same thing. So it's kind of like the daily leaderboard is kind of like a totally level playing field for everybody every time you play. And so it's kind of like a chance to learn the world and just get better at it. And then once you've mastered that, like, you come back the next day and learn the next one, so.
Exactly. So that way you don't get a sort of a repeat of your whole gameplay. Once you think you've mastered it, oh, there goes that map. Here comes the new one.
Right. Totally.
You're now showing off Race the Sun on a couple of other devices. You got the PlayStation Vita one first off.
Yep, so we're working on the Vita. We've been working with Sony for a while now. And we're going to bring it to the Vita, the PS3, and the PS4. It'll be a cross-buy this summer. So.
And one of the other things you're also showing off is the Oculus version of Race the Sun, which I've been a huge fan of Oculus since trying it out at E3 last June. And what you've done here with Race the Sun, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect, but this is kind of pictured what Race the Sun was going to be like on an Oculus.
Sure, yeah. It's pretty straightforward. It's just the ability to kind of like look around and survey the world around you. So, you know, there's a little bird that comes by at the end of each region, and you kind of like look up and follow it with your eyes. And, you know, it's hopefully not very nauseating because it's not turning a whole lot. I mean, you're just kind of going towards that sunset. And so, you know, hopefully it'll be something that you can play for a long time without, you know, feeling like you need to take the headset off. But it's also kind of like, back in the 90s when VR was kind of a fad that people were talking about. It's kind of that same visual aesthetic of just like really simple polygonal shapes, you know? Right. And so it's kind of cool to actually like match that vision of what VR was 15 years ago, you know, and add a good frame rate and, you know, visual experience. So
let me ask you, since, you know, developing for the Oculus, have you found any new sort of discoveries while trying to adapt it for virtual reality when it comes to Race the Sun?
New discoveries. So, I mean, it's interesting that, like, looking around with the headset, you see all kinds of things in the world that you can't see when the camera's locked. And so we discovered some bugs right away, like, oh, if you look up in the sky after the region, that bird is still, like, flying 5 minutes later because it never went away. So it was kind of cool, just, like, total unexpected things like that, you know, and just, like, the ability to turn around and look behind you, you know, while you're flying, and just kind of like a totally scary thing because you don't know if you're going to crash into something, you know, so it's just like, it's new ways to experience essentially the same gameplay, so.
Very cool. Now, one of the other really neat things is how you have the community set up so people can create their own maps.
That's correct, yeah, and we actually just launched workshop support on Steam, so people can create your own maps right in the game with the built-in level editor and share them to Steam and then download them right from within the game too. So we launched the workshop and had a contest, so we actually got lots of really cool entries and like things that we never would have expected. Like people were making like, you know, linear story-driven game modes that had an ending to them, and some people were like, somebody made a Tatooine map, and there's one that's like a mainframe. It's total black and white inside of a mainframe computer, and it's like really impressed us. So we're trying to think about how to showcase that content a lot more, and we're going to do that in a couple ways. So we have featured worlds that we're going to add to the main menu just to showcase, like, here's a cool new world that somebody shared this week. And the other way that we're going to showcase that stuff is through the world portals. So every once in a while you encounter a portal and you fly into it. And right now it just takes you to like our own space mode. We call it the Void.
Yeah.
But that's actually going to take you to a random user-created world every day. And so we're going to kind of curate this list, you know, but it'll be like totally unexpected and unknown, like what the world of that day will be. So,
now are you planning to do maybe like sort of like weekly or monthly contests to showcase who you felt or even what the community felt was like the best made,
right,
created map?
Yeah, so, you know, the featured worlds are kind of like the first step of that. I don't know if we're going to do a weekly or monthly, but we might do like a world of the week or something like that, you know, and do like a more slightly less frequent, but bigger contest with like, you know, win a poster or a t-shirt or something like that. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, after everything's all done with Race the Sun, after the launching of it on PlayStation Vita, PS3, PS4, what would Flipify like to do next? What's the next step for Flipify?
We've actually already announced our next game. So it's going to surprise some people, but it's kind of a polar opposite of Race the Sun. So it's called Hexarden, and it's kind of a slow, meditative puzzle game.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's we got a poster here. It's like a concept of it. So the idea is that you're kind of working on a hexagonal grid, and you're just trying to arrange puzzle pieces of like plants and water to make the best arrangement for a garden to like add the most points to it. So
excellent. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us here on B3. Look out for Race the Sun on PS3, PS4, PlayStation Vita. It's out right now on Steam to give a try. Go out, create your own levels, impress the crap out of everybody. I'm here with Mr. Evan Greenwood from Free Labs Games, who is showing off Broforce here at PAX East. Welcome to Boston Bass Brigade.
It's awesome to be here, dude.
So let me ask you, is Broforce the most manliest game ever?
I don't know if it's the most... I hope it is. I mean, there's another game called Dude Bros, the Dude Inning 2 or something like that. Like, I think that's pretty fucking manly, and he's got an amazing beard. I think Broforce is easily one of the most chaotic, and it's full of machismo. It's like a cast of like action heroes from the 90s and 80s, which is like the golden era of like biceps, basically, and like as committed to film. So yeah, we'd like it to be the most manly, certainly.
Because you talked about 80s and 90s heroes coming together to help save the world.
Yeah.
How and when did this concept first come into fruition over at Free Lives?
So we were basically doing bro puns, putting bro at the end of the front of the word, and kind of, so you know, as an example, I'd be like a programmer because I'd be coding away, and like our animator would be a bronimator, and then so on. And we were doing this, and then we're talking about the Rambo film, and like we're like, fuck, like Rambro, you just add an R and it's perfect, and then like Bromando and like B.A. Baracus, and there's all these like. It was like a hilarious idea, and there was a Ludum Dare coming up, and we just made a game, and it actually turned out to be pretty cool. So yeah, from there we eventually turned into a commercial project.
Awesome. So with Broforce, the object of the game, of course, is to save the world. Who are these people that are trying to destroy what is the most American place in the world?
The game is all about defeating terrorists, and we don't go into a lot of, we're not going to go in, even though there's very little story there at the moment, we're not going to go into a lot of background about who the terrorists are, or what specific, let's say, nationality or country they're going to come from. It's more about people who threaten freedom and, you know, American way of life and like don't want democracy and, you know, evil, horrible people, I guess.
Right. Just the fact that they're just evil people. That's the only reason why you want to take off.
The thing is, they're a little bit like, I guess, Nazis in movies. You know they're bad. We give them balaclavas. They kind of look like burglars almost, but we describe them as terrorists. It's a little bit of like a kind of hilarious thing that happened, I guess, in the films of the 90s days. You get like Rambo is fighting all these guys and he kills hundreds of them, and it's all very awesome, and it's like this kind of wonderful kind of sort of simplistic view of like of solving problems and solving like international problems. There's always someone who wants to destroy the world, so you need someone with like, you know, a hunky upper torso to stop them.
The only way to stop someone from blowing up the planet is to just blow them up, in all honesty.
If there's nothing left to fight over, then you win, I guess.
So, how far along has Broforce been in development? Do you have a set release date yet for it?
It is on Steam Early Access as of Monday. It just launched. We're working on a bunch of features, and we haven't exactly planned out the day it's going to be launched. We're really trying to get it in this year. I think we're going to be updating the game long after launch. New bros, new content. It's a really fun project to work on.
I know. I mean, look at these people. They're all fist pumping. Yeah, they are loving it.
I think it's almost as much fun to play as it is to develop.
And that's always such a good thing to hear, because you always hear of people working hard hours and getting so tired from developing. The fact that you're creating something fun and having fun with it, that shows how much love you have for a project such as Broforce.
Yeah, look, it is hard sometimes to keep the motivation up. There are deadlines. Sometimes we have to get a trailer out, you know, by a certain date, and there's like, the press is going out and we have to produce the content. Yeah, of course, it's always hard. Like, game development isn't an easy career, but I think we're super lucky to be working on a game that draws so much from the shared culture that the team has.
So, Evan, thank you so much for joining here on Boston Bash Brigade. For those who want more information on Broforce, where's the best place for people to check that out?
Check out our website. It's www.freelives.net. Otherwise, Devolver always promoting us. They've been super amazing this entire time. They set up these stands. We're lucky to be with Devolver, and they know more about it. And sometimes they might even know more about it than we do. But check out our website. There is a free online playable that you can play, but it's a little bit older than the current version. It's not quite as polished, but it's, you know, it still gives a fair indication of where the game's heading.
Awesome. Evan, thank you so much. And I honestly can say good luck with the full launch of this game. I think people are just going to instantly fall in love with it, man.
Thanks, dude. Thanks for the interview. Always fall in love with your ego tripping. Everybody's looking for a Sunday mission. Ain't nobody searching for a second chance. I'm just looking for a new romance because you too serious
for me. I'm over here at the Foss Fiend Systems booth with Richard and Gwen, who are showing off the video game Fracked. Welcome to the Boston Bash Brigade.
Well, thank you. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell us a little bit about Phosphine Systems. How did you guys get started?
I'll take it. Started out as Richard, basically making a game on his own as part of a student project. And then he had some time on his hand when he was looking for a job and ended up submitting it to the IGF. And then it went on to go into the student showcase and win the IGF award for best student game in 2011. So
yeah, and that was a real turning point for us. We couldn't believe that this weird thing that I made for no particular reason was getting all this attention.
Yeah.
And so Quinn and I decided, well, let's go for it. Let's turn this into something big and real and commercial. And after some pretty heavy-duty discussions, a couple tears, and maybe an argument or two, we said, let's go for it. Let's make this thing.
Yeah, so we brought our programmer Hank on board, and we started making the game, thinking it'd be like a one-year thing.
Yeah.
3 years later, we are now releasing.
Yeah.
April 22nd. So, yeah, we're really excited to be at the end of our journey.
So Fract is a little bit of a different sort of first-person experience. There's no real story, but this is more of an exploration game. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's like an exploration puzzle game, but it's all built around music. So there's this huge open world that you explore, and as you kind of pick apart these giant machines that are broken down, you fix them by solving puzzles. And these puzzles kind of react, and they make music that kind of evolves around you as you play. So there's this almost like a dynamic soundtrack that you're a part of that reacts to the choices that you made when you solve the puzzles.
Yeah, and it's really about exploring this world and exploring music at the same time. So like we're really excited to have people just kind of get introduced to these elements of music making. And while there's no like strict narrative, there's also the whole idea of this figuring out what's happening in this world, trying to put it back together, and then taking what you get from it and like moving forward with it and creating stuff of your own.
So how vast is this world that you have created in Fract?
It's too vast.
I mean,
it's huge.
Yeah. I think objectively it's like 3 kilometers by 3 kilometers by 3 kilometers, which is absurd. But
and in terms of gameplay, Hank just recently played through like the most final version of the game from start to finish, and he knows what the puzzles are supposed to be like. It took him 5 hours.
Yeah,
5 hours. So it's a big game.
I'd say probably, I don't know, we're not 100% sure, but 6 to 10 hours probably for most players.
And then depending on how much time you spend in the studio, possibly even more.
Right. Yeah.
And speaking of the studio, what's really cool is that as you progress through the game, you unlock all these little elements to create your own songs.
Yeah, and that's something we're crazy excited for. Like, people kind of maybe learn some of these tools in the main game, and then when they go into the studio, they kind of get, like, the hyped-up version of these tools to make their own tracks, their own music. They can even save their own synthesizers and songs, upload straight to YouTube. Like, we're super excited to hear what people make, you know?
And we're really excited to hopefully bring some of these tools of music making to a new audience that maybe, like, wouldn't otherwise, like, try it or maybe would feel intimidated. The idea, like, a big thing that drives us is kind of wanting to explore the idea of music making as a form of play. Like, just to have fun, experiment, play around, and yeah, just see what you can do.
Yeah, and we really want to make it so you don't have to be musical. Like, I mean, you can be, and it's fun, but at the same time, you can be completely tone deaf, and as long as you kind of, like, figure out the puzzles, you're going to make something that sounds cool.
That's awesome. So my question is, when it comes to the community, the people who are creating these songs, the people who are listening to the songs, are you going to, like, do something along the lines of, like, song of the week, song of the month, have people vote on what they think is the best music of that, you know, of that time period?
We definitely want to do that. And like, I like the way you worded it, like, song of the month, song of the week, like, that's cool. We really want to engage the community in kind of making stuff and sharing stuff. And we don't have, I'll be honest, like, our plan isn't specific for that, but that's...
But it's in the works.
It's in the works, and actually, pretty much just what you said is kind of what we had in mind. Yeah.
That is excellent. So, Fract finally coming out after years of work on April 22nd.
Yeah.
It's so far coming out just on Steam. Are there plans to bring it to any other systems?
Actually, we're doing Steam, GOG, and Humble on launch.
And you can also buy the game on fractgame.com, our website.
Yep.
We might have some other platforms at a later date, but for now, yeah, that's for PC and Mac.
Yeah.
For those who are interested in finding out more information on Fract, where can people go?
That would be fractgame.com.
Or you can follow us on Twitter, @fractgame. And yeah, just check out the website, and there will be a lot of details there.
All right. Gwen, Richard, thank you again for joining me on Boston Bash Brigade, and best of luck to you throughout the rest of PAX East.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
I'm here at the Cartoon Network booth with the guys who've created Monsters Ate My Birthday Cake. Please, each of you, introduce yourselves.
I'm Alex Atkins. I did the writing.
I'm Yuri Kovichko. I did a lot of the programming.
Justin Baldwin, I'm the creator and art director.
I'm Brandon Marino, and I'm one of the programmers.
First of all, guys, congratulations on doing the whole Kickstarter thing, succeeding, and then being picked up by the fine folks over at Cartoon Network. How did you feel about all these people backing you for the creation of such a wonderful game like this?
We felt great. It was kind of surprising, but the good kind of surprise. It's very rewarding to have people, you know, excited about a project that we had up until then been keeping pretty close to ourselves. And it just really motivated us to want to make the game.
How did the concept of Monsters Ate My Birthday Cake first come to fruition?
So a lot of it is actually an inspiration of like being a kid and like growing up in the 80s, I guess. It's based around a lot of like my and Brandon's childhood. We grew up together. And a lot of our inspirations are like the old, Super Mario 3, Earthbound, Bomberman, and of course Zelda. So we kind of wanted to take the idea of like the Zelda dungeon area puzzle solving stuff and split it up between multiple characters with really unique abilities. So
how did you decide upon the monsters? How did you decide, all right, this monster's going to have this power, that monster's going to have that power?
I don't know, actually. We just brainstormed a lot of ideas. I know we wanted a monster that threw up rainbows. I know we wanted a monster that farted. I know we wanted a monster that belched pollen. I know we wanted it to kind of like go with the cute vibe and give them kind of abilities that were humorous and ridiculous, like a monster. They're supposed to be kind of gross too. So, yeah.
Very cool. So, with Cartoon Network now backing you, like, how have they been helping to promote such a game like this?
They've been helping us a lot with like marketing. They helped us, you know, get a booth here at PAX. They've been helping us go through like QA type things and like giving us feedback on like how to best address their audience and stuff. But at the same time, they've been really great about like letting us have full creative control. They've been cheering us along the entire way, really liking our writing, our style. So it's been a really great experience.
So how has the feedback from everyone been here at PAX East when they played your video game?
It's been really good, yeah. It's really exciting to actually see people getting their hands on it now and checking it out. We've gotten some good feedback. We've gotten good ideas from just watching other people play and all that kind of stuff. So.
Excellent. So how far along are you guys in the development? Or are you guys almost done with the game, like completing it?
We're coming up pretty close to being done here. The game comes out at the end of June on Steam and mobile. We're in our last end crunch here to put polish in, and pretty close.
So I gotta ask, I know you guys are almost done with this game, but what can we expect from you guys next? Maybe, I don't know if that's something you guys have thought about yet, or...
Yeah, we have some other stuff in the cooker, but we're not talking about any of it just yet, so...
All right, that's fairly understandable. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me here on B3. You guys have made such a cute and lovely video game, Monsters Ate My Birthday Cake, coming hopefully within the next month or so on Steam and on some mobile devices. I am here with Chris Guillory from Switchblade Monkeys, who are showing off the PS4 title, Secret Ponchos. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade.
Oh, thanks, man. Glad I'm here.
So, before I had the chance to play the game, you were telling me the story of how Sony actually helped save the game from going bye-bye, perhaps?
Who knows where. Yeah, we brought this game all the way from Vancouver last year for PAX. And we didn't really know what we were doing at that point. We'd kind of run our budget out. And we were kind of at the tail end of the old-gen consoles. And we just brought it down here. We set up eight computers. We let everybody give it a shot. And some of those people just happened to be Sony reps in plain clothes that came back to us at the end of PAX and asked us, how can we get this game on the PS4?
Isn't it wonderful when things just seem to work out that way?
Yeah, it's pretty much like the Christmas miracle. You couldn't have wrote like a more obvious movie script, you know? Disney would have been all over that, right? It's like the fairy tale ending.
Where did the concept of secret ponchos originate from?
It kind of came from when Yusuf, our team leader, and I would play a lot of Soul Calibur 4. We were really into that game. We really liked how that game was a real chess match and that you just, so many different characters, but as long as you're good at that character, there's always a solution to any kind of an attack. What happened was we played the game so much that the original soundtrack we started to replace with our own music, and one day we put a Spaghetti Western soundtrack on while we were playing, and then all these really interesting, like, epic kind of moments started to happen where, you know, I had just like a 10% less health, and the trumpet line came on, and it was just like, ah! And then, you know, and I had the giant comeback, and it just felt so good. We looked at each other and we were like, how can we kind of like mash these things together and have that feel of a real competitive environment, but that really like stylized coolness of a Spaghetti Western?
So how did playing Soul Calibur 4 take it from the whole like fighting game style or setup like that to something more of this free roaming?
Yeah, well, then we decided we were trying to figure out like the other thing we liked about the game was that there was like a lot of spacing that was involved in the characters because they have different range of weapons, and we were trying to come up with kind of a new idea, and we thought, well, if we move that camera up, we can actually really see that spacing between the characters, and it seemed like we couldn't really think of anybody that had done that before, because most top-down games like that, there's not as much control of the character. It's more of like automatic kind of moves that happen. So we just wanted to blend that feel of playing a fighting game, but then give it this new perspective of having the camera up top.
So what inspired to go towards this path of like multiplayer? Like you mentioned how initially you were thinking online, but then you were like split screen. But so how and when did you realize, how can we combine the two?
Well, the thing about the multiplayer is it's kind of all I like to play. Playing an AI character, you can usually always try and kind of figure out their shtick. Whereas a human opponent, they can almost lead you on by doing something over and over and then completely change their style, like, in a heartbeat. So we really wanted to focus on just having a player versus player and with not a lot of AI and stuff like that, because it's just really the competitive nature of those types of games that I find the most fun.
So let me ask you, is there like a single player aspect of the game, or is it completely multiplayer?
It's basically like completely multiplayer, but we obviously will have like a single player tutorial mode, or kind of like how in Street Fighter you fight your way through AI characters that get more difficult as you go on, or maybe possibly like hordes of really easy AI characters and like how many you can kill in a certain amount of time to like get your skills up. But ultimately, it's just going to be the online. But the great part about that is we didn't really know how to market that, because if we marketed it ourselves and maybe we were able to sell a few thousand copies, even the odds of those people logging on at the same time is so slim. And if you bought the game and then you logged on and there's nobody to play, it would be the death of the game right there.
Yeah,
right?
It would be a little bit of a bummer.
So when Sony approached us, they offered us the PlayStation Plus deal, where we're going to give the game away for free for 1 month on PSN. And that's going to hopefully have a lot of people that will download the game, which will start the community going. And then at that point, we can continue to release characters and levels as long as people want to continue to play the game.
Yeah, I remember being at the Sony press conference at E3 where they announced it was Secret Ponchos, it was Outlast, and I believe it was Octodad as the three titles.
Yeah, and
believe it or not, that was... I was just only maybe not even 6 months after we were here with no direction. And then the next thing you know, we're on stage in L.A. at E3.
So my question here is, since this is your second time here at PAX East, how has Secret Pontos evolved ever since that last visit?
So what we're showing here now is almost the equivalent of what we were showing previously as far as the progress of how much of the game we'd completed. But we developed the game for the last gen. So this entire year since we were here last time, we've spent the whole time rebuilding the game from scratch to optimize the PS4 hardware, because we really had to restrict a lot of our stuff to make it work for the last gen system. And then it kind of just got blown wide open, like, let's add an awesome lighting engine, and let's just, the sounds don't have to be as short, or I can have more of them, or everything, all the everything just got bumped up, and it's running smoother, and it's just a dream to work on the new hardware.
I've overheard that this game is not only coming out for PlayStation 4, but it's also coming to Steam, correct?
Yeah, we just announced that we're going to do early access on Steam, and the reason we're doing that is because when we were here last year, everyone was asking, so when is the game coming out on Steam? And that didn't even cross our minds. We were just totally console focused, and that was just because we were console gamers. So it just seemed obvious that we're going to make a game and it's going to come out on a console. But then everybody was like, this would be so cool on Steam. But our team is very small and our resources are very thin. We couldn't develop a PC version at the same time. But what we're going to do is we're going to do early access, and hopefully that will give us the money to fund the PC build. And it also gives us the advantage to be able to really polish the game with the community's involvement. And that will make our console launch so the game is just, like, super slick.
Excellent. Now, my question now is, since it's going to be online for PS4 and Steam, will there be a sort of cross-play mechanic added to it?
We wanted that, and Sony, we talked to Sony about that, and they were like, yeah, you can do it, but it's really difficult. Just because everything has to be so secure between each platform, and we basically would have to hire a lot more programmers, and it's kind of a logistics problem, you know, more than anything. So, I mean, in a perfect world, we would do that in a heartbeat, but honestly, it's probably not going to happen. I mean, it would be awesome, but
there's, you never know, it could happen.
Yeah, and it could, and there's other options as well, as like PS Vita and PS4 that could run together.
Yeah.
Things like that, just because they're on the same platform, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
So, when can people expect to be able to go hands-on with Secret Ponchos in their own homes?
We're going to hopefully have early access within the next couple months. We don't have like a set deadline, but we're getting close, and we really want to get the ball rolling with everyone helping us get this game up to par and launch it on the PS4, and hopefully it'll just be a blast and be good. Everyone will love it. We'll be on there playing. We'll have somebody more than just the 12 of us to play against.
Yes.
Because I play with a lot of these gamers, and I mean, I've been playing this game for years, and they get 3 rounds, and they're already making me sweat, right? So it'll be fun to play online with everyone else.
Well, Chris, I am really looking forward to seeing the final product of this. I'm wishing you nothing but the best. Secret Ponchos coming soon onto PlayStation 4 and onto Steam. Is it PC and Mac, or just PC?
That's a good question. I don't know, because that's not really my department. But like I said, we want to get this in everyone's hands. So we're going to do our best. I can't give you like a firm answer on that.
That's all right. Now, where can people check out more information on Secret Ponchos?
You can go to our Facebook page. It's Secret Ponchos. And we have a webpage, secretponchos.com. The company Switchblade Monkeys, and if anybody wants to get in touch with us, like, everybody on the floor here is a developer, so you're talking to everybody that's worked on the game, and if you send a message on Facebook, it's probably going to be me or Yusuf that answers it. So you can talk directly to us, give us feedback, let us know what you want to see in the game, and you can talk directly to us about it.
Alright, Chris, thank you again. Secret Ponchos coming onto Steam PS4 very, very soon.
Thanks. Great talking to you.
So I'm here with Simon from Spearhead Games. Welcome to Boston Bass Brigade.
Thank you.
So you are showing off this new game that you're working on, Project Cyber.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
Well, let me ask you something. How does it feel to have just invented the hockey equivalent of esports?
If it's what I just did, it feels awesome, but I still need to prove that this is it. We just got started on this project like 12 weeks ago. So it's still a baby game, it's super young for a game, 12 weeks into the development. But we do feel like people are having a thrill. We feel like it's super easy to pick up and it has a lot of depth. So we're super proud. It feels like it's unprecedented. It looks like, it doesn't look like any other game before. And like, we just got started, so it will become much cooler than that. So, but we feel like we have a very strong base to build upon. And like, we are just so excited to see all these players having a thrill playing it.
Well, dude, for someone that has just been working on it for the past few months, this is showing a lot of promise. I can honestly see this becoming truly a popular esport. I wouldn't say it's going to get LOL big, but I can see you guys having your own massive booth with people watching it. I can honestly say this is going to be huge.
It is super cool that you say that because like just like 1 hour ago, there is a girl that came in and she played and she said, "Holy shit, this is the next esport." And I was, shh, don't say that too loud, because some people like have become very emotional when you use the word esport, and we've grown to become careful before using this word. So I go to this girl, I speak with her, I ask her, who do you work for? And she tells me, I work for Riot Games. I am, wow, a person from Riot Games tell us that we are an esport? That's crazy.
Dude, that already shows you. Look how many people are going to be backing this, man. Well, the coolest thing is right now, you're actually giving away beta keys right now for the game, and you're going to be listening to the feedback from these people while you're going to be live streaming it on Twitch. Is this correct?
Not exactly, because those are not beta key, because we are far, far, far from being beta. The game actually just got started, right?
Right.
And we call it pre-demo key, because until this day, there was not even a demo made for this game. This is the first demo we're making for it.
Right.
So we are getting the people invested and involved in the project from the very start of it. So we're giving key to everyone who wants to be part of it. And honestly, the only thing we want is this project to be freaking kick-ass. We have no other interest than that. We have no plan yet for monetization. We have no plan for anything except making the best possible game. And having like all these players involved in the project since the beginning like that is what allows us to have such an efficient development process. I feel like we're going like 10 times faster because we have all these brains involved in the process. So what we do is we give the game to everyone, and we are having our design meeting on Twitch every day at 7 p.m. and we play with the player and discuss with them, and this is what allow us to have the solution to any single problem we have. So everyone has the chance from the beginning to see the game in development, participate into it, give us idea, feedback or anything. And we really are genuine in our effort to have the community building the game from the ground up.
That is incredible. And you know, I know we've been like hyping this all up. I can honestly see like people forming their own teams and everything. What you guys have created is the start of something brand new and fresh, and I honestly cannot wait to see how far this is gonna go, man.
Yeah, we're very ballsy. We really decided that we will start from a totally brand new concept, build it from the ground up, and see where it leads. It is scary. Not many developers have the courage to do that because it involves not knowing in advance where you're going, right?
Yeah.
Because when you make a game that looks like another game, you have an idea of the formula. What we're doing is brand new, and this is what allows us to have people involved in it, because we are shaping it as we go, right?
Right.
So we don't know in advance where we are going. And honestly, this process has proved super efficient. And this, honestly, I think goes faster than when another company tries to reproduce the project. Because we are really honest in our development and we try to figure the answer as we go. And it just feels like an amazing synergic experience with the community.
Simon, this is just so incredible what you have created. I wish you nothing but the best in success. For those that are interested in finding out more on Project Cyber, where's the best place for people to check it out?
So, if you want the game for free, we're giving it to everyone. www.spearheadgames.ca/cyber. You just have to give us your email. We will send you a Steam key for free by email. And then you can follow up on Twitch. We stream nonstop. twitch.tv/spiritgames. And every day at 7 p.m. we are having a design meeting and we discuss and play with the guys.
All right, Simon, thank you so much for joining us on the Boston Bass Brigade. And for the love of God, everyone who is listening to this, check out Project Cyber. This is going to be huge! Yeah.